This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi tamoto, MPR. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.mpr.nz/donate.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today we have with us
Tanya Kopitko,
Alison Milden,
and I'm Stuart Burks. Now, Tanya, you were born in Palmerston North.
I certainly was, at the public hospital, in fact.
Yeah.
Can't get more palmy than that.
Right. So you grew up here, went to school here?
I did. I went to university here. So, yes, I'm a product of Massey University.
Oh, studying what?
I specialise in social anthropology. I went to university to study geography and English, and probably going to be an English teacher, and I fell in love with social anthropology.
Oh, was that in what sort of area? I mean, third world type thing, or
general anthropology? Yes, we had a very, very good department then. I mean, I guess the department's very good now, but we had Sir Hugh Carfaru was the head of department, very distinguished man. We had Michael Jackson as one of the professors, and he was a very, very excellent lecturer. Ian Duncan, it was a really, really good department, and what I suppose it first did is it got me interested in understanding the way society is. And I guess I can link that to other aspects of my background. You might gather from my name that I don't sound like a typical New Zealander. So I am a child of migrant stock. So my mother was a New Zealander, but my father came from Belarus, and he came here after World War II. And like anybody that comes from a background where you're parents come from two different cultures, it sets you up in a different way in relation to your society. And so for me, I suppose, studying social anthropology helped me start to answer some questions about why different cultures behave in different ways. And it fascinated me. And I carried on with that. But what was so lovely about that department is that they were very, very supportive of us following our deep interests in the subject. And my interest artistically has always been dance. And one of the papers that we did was about mythology. And we were able to analyse something mythological. And I also asked, would it be possible to analyse a folk dance? And they said, why not? Something unusual? Give it a go. So I did. I analysed actually what was a Russian, very old-fashioned Russian folk dance about the cycles of the moon and the seasons. And you could analyse it in all its symbolism, like any story, any myth, or anything else. And they were very supportive of this, and so they said, why don't you carry on and specialise in dance anthropology? And they encouraged me to look outside of New Zealand as to where I could do this, because it was a very new topic. And they said, we could help you here, but we would be learning with you should go to a university where you can do it. And that led me in the end to going to the Queen's University in Belfast and doing my PhD in dance anthropology. So from Palmerston North, I've also studied overseas, and I've linked my, I suppose, university studies with my love of the arts and finding out who I am on the process. So there you are.
So were you aiming for an academic career?
Not at all. And in fact, I haven't had an academic career because one of the joys of social anthropology is that you could follow an academic path and do more and more and more research, or it sets you up with the tools to be able to work in a developmental way within a community. And that is something that's always interested me more.
Now, that's interesting, because a lot of the views of anthropology, be thinking of third world or primitive societies and so on. But I know it has, but they have looked at, there's the book Watching the English, which was anthropology of English society. So the focus you got in your training here was looking at New Zealand society as well?
No, or just it was looking at the broad principles of anthropology. So it could be looking at kinship or looking at marriage or looking at different institutions, political institutions, and comparing them. Or it could be looking at something in a specific society. So we didn't actually focus on New Zealand society then. The societies that we focused on were the societies that our lecturers had done their research in.
Okay.
So that we had first-hand information on how people went about their research and very deep knowledge of those societies.
And they were generally third world countries?
Michael Jackson had worked in Sierra Leone. Hugh Kafuru, of course, had done his study with Māori. So it depended on what they were doing. But third world, now we wouldn't call it at all.
Because
I would totally agree, human beings are human beings. It doesn't matter what society you live in. We're all trying to seek answers to something.
So what would be the distinction between sociology and social anthropology?
Oh, Lordy, I don't know.
Ask them at
the department. One has got to focus on modern society. Well, that's how I used to feel it was. And social anthropology has got more of a focus on societies outside your own.
Okay.
But I don't know. It's probably changed now because social anthropology has had to change. I think most anthropologists study their own societies. I think gone are the day are people from outside society going and studying somebody else's culture. That's more into that colonial sort of. Although sometimes people from outside have very good insights. But people work as teams, you know, it's sort of changed, but it's cool. But anyhow, I specialised in dance anthropology and I came back to New Zealand to do my research. And I did my research in Palmerston North. And I was at the time when breakdance first started in New Zealand.
Okay.
And so my PhD thesis was actually a comparison between ballet and breakdance. And you couldn't get two more opposite forms of movement at that particular time. And so it set itself up as a very brilliant comparison. But there were things like the fact that a lot of breakdance at the very beginning was very male-orientated. It was very Māori and Pacific Island-dominated, whereas you've got ballet that is not child-dominated at all in terms of its structure. It actually comes from England in terms of many of its institutions. But anyhow, it's something that's managed by adults for children. So it's completely in a completely opposite way. So that was great. And when I finished that, I didn't have a desire to do more and more and more research and set myself up in some sort of academic career based on that type of research. What I wanted to do and what whet my appetite was the fact that I could see all the positive things that breakdance was doing for young people. And I was very interested in working in the field of community arts. Oh, goodness me. Coming together and developing your confidence and working together as teams and creating your own work. If you compare that with ballet, things have changed now, but certainly at that time you went to learn. You didn't put your own stamp on it. You didn't create yourself. You did what you were told.
Very formulaic.
Very formulaic, yes. Mm. I mean, and I'm saying that things have changed a lot now because actually the dance world has learnt a lot from the hip-hop world.
Yeah.
And vice versa. So things.
And I suppose breakdance would have matured as well, so there'd be set moves that you have to learn as well.
Well, now it's been codified by studios, though, not by the breakdancers or by the hip hoppers, because
by the studio. The dance studios.
Dance studios.
Oh, once you start teaching, you need a curriculum.
You decide you need a curriculum, and
you need the beginner, the intermediate, and then
you
have competitions and you have the pins.
You can't help yourself, can you? Yeah. Anyhow, so that's sort of that. So, yes, I worked in the area of community arts, which is something that I found out a lot more about when I was studying in Northern Ireland. It was a whole movement that had started around the world, but was particularly strong in the UK in the late 80s.
Okay, so now you're defining, there's the suggestion there is an entity called community arts.
It's an approach to art.
Is that relatively new then?
It started in the 80s, yeah.
Okay, so it's a sort of global or Western movement?
Even global, I would say, because some of the best practices of community arts are found in African countries or India.
Okay, so what does it give and what is it that wasn't there before?
Right, well, the arts can be very elitist, shall we say. It's the same prescription that you get in a dance studio where you do as you're told, and somebody has some values that certain arts are very important and should be funded. And, you know, usually that's your opera and your ballet and your orchestras. And other arts are less important, and so they wouldn't get the same type of thing. So community arts comes from, I suppose, a stand where people have a right to develop their own arts.
But that was sort of long-standing, though, wasn't it, with things like Morris dancers and folk dancing and
that got when you start going into structuring art and having a society which judges art, all that got relegated to something called folk dance.
Ah, okay.
And by relegating it into
something
like... And
I see your hands are pointing down rather than up.
By relegating something into a folk activity, you're not giving it very much prestige.
Yeah, it doesn't have the status because it's for the common person.
Exactly, yeah. So community arts is trying to move away from that area of structuring things and saying that something is more important than others. But it also had, in that time, it had a much stronger political thing, in that often the art projects were an aim to bring together groups who might be conflicted with each other. So a prime example would be when I was in Northern Ireland in the late 80s, it was still the Troubles.
Yes.
Okay, so the biggest conflict there was the problems between the Protestants and the Catholics. So the community arts organisation that I met and enjoyed working with there did a variety of work in the community. Some of it wasn't too difficult, but some of it they just head on tried to develop projects that would bring people from those disparate communities together and get them to find common ground through doing things.
So it's a bit like the youth orchestra with Israelis and Palestinians.
Yeah, exactly. Emerged from the movement of community arts, that way of thinking. Yeah.
So, and it's active in New Zealand?
It's starting to be active again. What happened was that it developed very much into the 80s and 90s, and I can't remember the exact date, but in Britain, the parallel would be when Margaret Thatcher came in, she cut the funding for community arts and so undermined it a lot.
It's like when our night schools were very active.
Exactly, that type of thing.
Yeah.
And in New Zealand, Creative New Zealand used to support... No, it wasn't Creative New Zealand, it was the QE2 Arts Council of New Zealand, used to support regional arts councils and community arts councils and actually provided funding. And when I was the community arts advisor for Palmerston North, which I was for 10 years, and I was the first one in Palmerston North, so that was at that movement, that was funded partially by QE2 Arts Council and partially funded by the Palmerston North City Council, because QE2 Arts Council used to go into negotiation with councils to try and get them to fund the arts. But then QE2 Arts Council restructured and turned into Creative New Zealand, and they dissolved the Regional Arts Council and they ceased funding the community arts councils. And then over time, people or councils forgot what it was all about, and it got a bit... Yeah. And so some of them fell by the way.
The funding now seems to go more for, is it TV programmes?
It does, but the good thing is that in a few, let's say in the last 5 years, there's been a resurgence in interest in funding community arts again.
Oh, okay.
And Creative New Zealand have taken that up. So that's quite good. So if I had a project that I wanted to do, let's say it could be dance in Palmerston North, it could be a project where we were bringing different cultural groups together, people with disabilities, something like that, I could put a funding application into either the City Council or into Creative New Zealand, and I would have as good a chance as anybody else in getting some funding to fund that. So things have come round in a circle again. It's quite interesting.
So are you dealing then mainly with young people?
No, I am. Now I've become mature myself. I prefer to work with mature people in dance most of the time. But when I do my one-off projects, like I have done a couple at Te Manawa for general community participation, then I would expect to have families and young people and all ages. But I don't specifically work with young people any longer. There are many people in Palmerston North who work with young people, and they do a jolly good job of it, and I don't have to, so therefore I won't get so tired.
So how do you define mature?
Mature. Well, my Crow's Feet Dance Collective project is for women aged 35 plus. So for dance, and I'm not talking about ballroom dancing because that's different, but for performance dance, for theatre dance or for ballet, that's quite old to start dancing. You wouldn't be thinking that. Yeah. So that's why I say it's mature. My dance exercise project that I do, I haven't really put an age thing on it, but when you advertise classes that start at 10 o'clock in the morning, then I have a lot of newly retired women that come to that one. It's not restricted to women, that one, but only women have come, and that would mean that if a gentleman turns up, often they feel out of place because it's all these women that are there. But if I do get anybody, any gentlemen or any men contacting me about exercise and they feel that that's not appropriate, then I always try and let them know that there are other things that they can go to. And indeed, I must put a plug in here for the Manawatū Sports Network. What are they called? Not Sports Foundation. Is it Sports Foundation? Manawatū Sports. Sport Manawatū, that's what I'm trying to think of. Yeah, and they put out a good catalogue, or on their website, they put all of the types of exercise things that people could go to. And that's really excellent, because it then doesn't put somebody like me in a position like, well, why don't you do this or why don't you do that? You know, lots of people are doing all sorts of things, and as long as people have got access to the information, then we can all carry on doing our different things.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I see the same with aqua aerobics. You get one or two men sometimes in there, but it's mainly them.
And there are other types of dance forms that men go to. They do go to folk dance. There's a Greek folk dance club in town. There's Morris dancing still going. There's still lots of social dance, and that attracts people of all ages. So, you know, we're not devoid of things for men to do.
There is much social. There used to be large social dances at what was then the Cosmopolitan Club, and now they don't have those facilities.
I know some of the dance studios are holding good general classes for
classes.
They provide other things for people to do. You know, good regular dances. I don't know. I know that Tempo Dance Studio, which is Mike Whitson, who's somebody who's a Palmerstonian who's come back, he was running some afternoons at the Cosmopolitan Club not that long ago.
Okay.
The COVID situation has wrecked a lot of things, especially social dance, because I can teach dance and everybody's in a row facing me, so I can control 2 meters apart and all that sort of thing. But as soon as you're doing social dance, you're facing somebody else. So at the moment, under red, it's only people who can dance with each other, partners, that
I just meant under red means the red restrictions.
Yes,
for
that's
COVID,
right. Yeah. Yes, yeah. Otherwise, you know, and people still have to wear masks and all sorts of things
now,
like that.
Now,
so
from your anthropology background, though, because my impression was New Zealand is probably more uptight than certain other cultures about sort of men dancing and so on. Is that something you observe?
It's an interesting one, and you could. I think we've gone through phases. I would certainly say that if it wasn't for country dancers, most of us wouldn't exist, because that's how our grandparents.
Like Newbury Hall. Yes, those were a big thing.
They were a huge thing. So I blame the 1970s when we all became hippies and started doing this free dancing and stopped actually dancing
when
as
rock
partners.
And roll,
yes,
rock
although
and roll actually had some good structure.
Yeah, rock and roll, you had to learn how to dance with a partner.
But that had gone by the 70s.
It sort of had, yeah. And then what happened was that when people wanted to dance with partners, it seemed to be taken over by studios where you had to go and learn rather than having the social dances. But now, if you look at young people, they're happy dancing with each other. It's sort of gone through a revival. People want to learn salsa.
Oh, so for the young ones, yeah, but.
Yes,
but I'm thinking more as our older
males, I think, missed out on a whole lot. And I will be bold enough to say that some of them are wanting to come back and learn how to dance now because they realise they've missed out. And it's quite difficult for them because they missed out
there's
on
no
so
tradition.
Much learning. That often they will go to a class and they'll find that the women there actually can dance better or have had more experience than them.
Yeah.
But the poor souls are expected to lead.
Well,
and it's difficult.
Yeah.
it makes it hard, and it has to be a really good teacher that can handle that situation.
Yeah. You mentioned the country dances. I get several people talking about their experiences at the country dances, and they're not talking about the dancing. They're talking about the girls are lined up along one wall, the boys are lined up among the other. The boy has to walk all the way across the hall.
Yes.
Everyone sees them going. The girl says no. The boy turns around. Everyone sees them walking.
Probably be the last time they ever went to one of those.
There is something more to that, because I was brought up that if you refused to dance, that meant you had to sit the dance out.
Yes.
So at the Newbury Hall, someone who perhaps you didn't feel inclined to dance with would ask you.
Yes.
And if you had courage
of
your convictions and said thank you, but no thank you, you then just sat there.
But there was also
because you couldn't accept.
There was a definite etiquette about it all.
For some, there was a convention, I think, that they should say yes to the first dance, and and then say, "Well, right, thank you," and then go sit down.
You certainly had to learn diplomacy, didn't you? Or you had to speak your mind in a polite way. Yeah, it's fascinating.
Harder.
Yes. Yeah.
But that has actually carried through. I know, sometimes in go with a group of people to a restaurant or whatever, or even in barbecues, you get women sit down one side of a long table and the men sit down on the other. And it seems to be
a very New Zealand thing.
Yes, I think it is.
I mean, it's not ever been part of, I suppose, the people that I've mixed with.
Yeah.
But it does appear to be common in this country.
Yes,
I've certainly been to things where even if now you see it in restaurants, even if pairs sit down together, once everything sort of relaxes, they all change, and suddenly you see groups of women sitting together and groups of men sitting together as though they don't really want to talk with the opposite. It's an interesting phenomenon.
Yeah,
it's not one that I find particularly interesting myself.
Yeah.
Anyhow, there we go.
Okay. So do you find... Okay, so mainly you've got older women. Are they carrying on very long? Is it keeping them very active into their 80s, say?
Well, it should do. I wouldn't know, because I've only been running my projects for 5 years now since I've come back here. But when I did my research in Palmerston North, when I was doing my PhD research, I had to look at everything that was going on in Palmerston North in the dance area before I settled on my two topics, because you have to provide the background. And I remember then this wonderful woman in her 70s who ran the Allwood Dance Program, which, as far as I understood, had risen out of the League of Health and Beauty, which was something that started in the 20s or the 30s. And she was still teaching, I might be wrong, but I'm going to take a stab and say she was still teaching at 77. Now, here I was doing my research in my late 20s, thinking, oh, I hope I can still dance when I'm that age, because that was a big deal.
Yes, yeah.
And now we've got more and more and more people that are dancing at old age. And the other project that I run, Crow's Feet Dance Collective, which was actually started by a wonderful woman called Jan Bolwell in Wellington. So we've got a empire called Crow's Feet because it's in Wellington, Hutt, Kapiti, and now in Palmerston North because I've shifted here. But that is a performance company which is comprised of mature women. And I think our eldest dancer is 79. So that the age range in that dance company is something between 35 and 79. That's it's what I would call contemporary theatre style. So the last piece that we did, and we performed it at the Globe in Palmerston North, I think it was on the 5th of December last year, we did Carmina Burana.
Yep.
We did a dance version of Carmina Burana, and we looked at the parallel between the Black Plague that was going on in Carmina Burana and COVID, which is going on now. So we don't just, when we create things, we don't just try and replicate the thing. We try and make it relevant to now.
And you choreograph your own things.
All original choreography. We used the music, but it was all original choreography. And with most of us, we try, because there's three of us that choreograph it, Jan divides it all up, we all have our bits. And with my dancers here, I always invite them to be part of creating whatever we're doing. And obviously, because we're choreographing it ourselves, we're creating the type of movement that we're capable of doing.
Okay.
So we're not going to do 21 pirouettes and have our legs up sticking in the air, but we are going to tell you a story through movement, and sometimes we talk as well.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website. And a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you're a fan of NPR, listening to our podcasts and live stream has never been easier. Just search for accessmedia.nz on the App Store or Google Play and download the app with the kiwifruit logo. Once you've got it, pick Manawatu People's Radio from the list of stations and go find your new favourite show.